This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We're going to head off and go straight into the result of the New Plymouth three-dayer, was it, Barry?
It was 3 days over their long weekend.
And then we're going to head off to New South Wales and talk to our friend Jake Andrew.
If he's an underwater over there.
Well, I've got the Taranaki Intermediate Junior 5B pairs. That was won by a Hawera pair, Diane Waite and Anne Putt. Second with Patricia Armstrong and Mara Robinson. Again, from Hawera. Well done there.
Speaking of Hawera, where yeah. I went to school, by the way, not that that has any effect on these results. The open pairs, which is called the Marion Hill Open 10A pairs, and I believe, and I might leave myself to stuff this up, but I'm pretty sure that Marion Hill might have hailed from Hawera, and her and her partner, I think his name was Francis Ewington, won the New Zealand pairs back in the day. The 10A pairs is named after Marion, and the winners were Jeremy Fraser-Hoskin and Moss Wiley, and second were Malcolm Mayer and Zachary Yarn.
Great. The intermediate and junior 5B pairs was taken out by the Jensen team, Pamela Jensen from New Plymouth, Alistair James, Jack's dad from Palmy, and Irene Taunt and Helen Kelly.
So the 10A open teams was a bit of a one-horse race. The Yarn team won every match, and with a match to go, they were so far in front they couldn't be caught. 22 VPs ahead, I think, with one match to play. So that was Malcolm Mayer and Zachary Yarn again, with Liz and Blair Fisher. And coming in second was the Yule team, Ken and Kathy Yule with Jenna and Christine Gibbons.
Oh, nice. Bay of Plenty Waikato, very good.
Well, they also did well in the Swiss pairs, Waikato Bays, won by Herman Wan and Yuzhong Chen, second with Hugh and Di McAllister.
Cool. Go Waikato Bay.
The mighty MCG.
We're back with Paul Young, the tournament convener for the Melbourne Cricket Ground Bridge Club. Just finishing off from our chat from last week. Apart from looking forward to 26, what does Moonee Valley have in store for this year for their bridge members?
That's a good question. We have a range of events all the way through the year. We've got one that springs to mind. Pete Hollins is coming and doing some education courses for us. We've got 44 learners this semester, which is just
well
outstanding.
Done.
That's great.
Linda and the team on the education committee do a brilliant job. I'm not sure they even know why this year has been so successful with 44. So we're a club of about 350 members, sort of in the top two or three clubs in metropolitan Melbourne. So we run all the usual education services. We have special events. We've got our Congress coming up in late May, early June, which is back-to-back with the Victorian Festival of Bridge. Hopefully a few New Zealanders make their way over for the Festival of Bridge, which has got a new venue this year.
Have you been to that one, Barry?
No, I haven't. No, I don't think I have. VCC is the only one I've been to in Melbourne.
Barry, it's been rebranded. The Victorian Festival of Bridge incorporates the Victor Champion Cup. It's been expanded a little with some side events and social activities, but at its core, it's the VCC.
Very good.
It's the only time I've been to Melbourne, played in that. And I've got to say, I never went to the MCG. I made it to Flemington instead.
You've reminded me. So as the organiser, well, I live in Flemington. I can see the race course out my windows. I was amazed how many long-term Melburnians had never been to the MCG.
Okay.
I happen to be a member, and I'm lucky that I go to the football when my team's playing, and they play there a lot. But so many people said, oh, it's great to be able to come here. I've never been. If you don't follow cricket and football or go and see Ed Sheeran or whoever's playing there, you've got no reason to go.
My sister-in-law is going over for the Grand Prix, and on their tour thingy, they're over there for a month, is a tour of the MCG. So I didn't realise that they actually take tours there, but I guess they do. It's a very popular venue.
I think I looked into that as part of for some of the bridge players, but I think the bridge players yesterday did their own tours, wandered through anything that was open. There's a sports museum inside the ground. I've walked through it a few years ago. Yeah, there's plenty to do in there other than play bridge.
Have you been to Flemington, by the way, Phil, if you live that close? I did walk down the famous Straight Six at Flemington. Nobody stopped me.
Well, strangely and sadly, I remember when Mackay Bidiva won the third Melbourne Cup, I think. I stood there with my daughter on my shoulders at the start. There's barricades, big fencing all the way around it now, so you can't do that anymore.
Wow, I'll tell you what happened to me. This is the Bridge Show, and I should be talking about this. Because we were there for the VCC, it's sort of related. My wife and her sister wanted to go shopping, which didn't thrill me, and I said, right, I'm going to find my way to Flemington. Honestly, I walked down the driveway. Nobody stopped me. I thought there'd be people around. There weren't. I walked everywhere. I saw the statue of Bart Cummings, the statue of Mackay Bidiva, and I walked through all the stalls where the horses get tied up. Nobody came anywhere near me. I even walked out onto the course by the winning post. So I was slightly surprised by all this. It wasn't a race day, obviously. It's obviously not like that now.
You can still walk through. I think if you walked onto the course, I was sort of reflecting more on that. If you try and walk onto the course, you probably could. During COVID, the racetrack in that area was our saviour. It's lovely to walk through and walk around. Although during that, I think I got a little bit sick of seeing Mackay Bidiva and Bart as the only only other living ex-living creatures I saw. And Roy Higgins up the back. I don't know if you got to see Roy as well.
I think I did. I've had a good wander around. Soon when I figured out nobody was going to stop me, I thought, oh, well, I might as well look at everything. MCG is next.
I tried to get Mariana along. I saved her a spot.
I know.
We had a cancellation. I thought, I'll leave this as TBA. And so I blocked it out.
Oh, thanks.
I will let you both know if we do get a slot on the calendar, or I shouldn't say if, when we get a slot in the calendar next
year.
I'm
sure you will.
Roughly the same weekend or the weekend before. So late February, early March, hopefully we'll be doing a little bigger and better. I should have also added, we did have a couple of people from the UK who happened to be on holidays in Melbourne, so they got lucky. We had a group of people who heard about it, wanted to come to the MCG. They drove over 300 kilometres from Albury on the border with Victoria. We had people from Torquay. One of the members from Torquay said, I want to go and see the long room. There was no reference to they want to go and play bridge. They want to go and see the long room. There's this bridge event we're playing. And so they brought a group of people along. We had players from Geelong, from Sale, from Bairnsdale. So all around Victoria. We did drag people in. Hopefully they all had a great day. I tried to find a direct New Zealand connection. One of the ladies on the organising committee, Sally Foster. Sally's an ex-Kiwi. And one of the members of the MCC, Penny Blankfield, who happened to win one of the prizes yesterday. She's also a Kiwi. So there was a little bit of a connection. But next year, hopefully, there'll be a stronger one.
Yeah.
Well, once they hear about it, you know, I really think that the venue is the draw card for a lot of people. The MCG has got to be.
I'll try and make it next time. Maybe, though, I won't have cortisone injections the week before.
Ouch.
And I've got a couple of cousins, too. They live there in Melbourne. So one of them lives in Ivanhoe and one lives just out by the airport.
I was going to try and claim Alex Jones, who won, I think you said, East West, as a cousin. You know, not going to get away with that.
That's reaching a little bit, isn't it? Family by name association. There you go. One thing I'm going to ask you, if you've got a tip for anybody listening, what would that be?
That's a bit tough, Mariana. Just been immersed in bridge for the last few days, and now you're having to...
I must admit, Barry's picked the look on my face, obviously. I have been immersed in bridge. I'm actually in the process of sorting out all the prizes. My tip is, all you people in New Zealand, come and visit Melbourne in February next year, make a week of it, and then consider playing at the MCG and come and add to what was a fantastic event yesterday. Melbourne in autumn is the most beautiful place. Come to Melbourne. There's my tip.
Very cool.
Phil, roughly how much in prize money do you think you've paid out? Or about to pay out?
There's a bit of a model we do, which is about 25% of the total cost. We also had a little bit of a novelty prize where we had some guest passes at Flemington. So they were offered to the people who were struggling at the halfway mark, to put it that way. So the people who were running last at the halfway mark got a prize.
That's cool.
It's a good idea. A bit of encouragement for those people who wouldn't go astray.
Yeah.
But, actually, there is a link with the Cox Plate. Peter Cox, who was the Gosh, I'm bound to get his title wrong, but he is involved with the ABF, and also his family are involved with the Cox Plate. So he's responsible for Bridge TV, is it?
Yeah, I've spoken to Pete a couple of times about marketing and things we can do in Victoria, but I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I'll ask next time I see him.
His family are closely involved with the Cox Plate, right. So he'll be able to tell you all about it. Yeah. He's a good guy. Is he the marketing manager? I think that might be his title, something like that.
ABF.
He was. I don't think he is at the moment. And he's still involved with Bridge TV, I think.
We should catch up again. It's been great. It's hard to know how to set up the very first tournament. Glad it was successful.
Really appreciate your support.
I'm sure you probably had a few sleepless nights, Phil. So hopefully you can sleep in tomorrow.
There's more bridge to be played. There's club bridge tonight, state bridge on Wednesday. It never ends.
Let's hope not.
Absolutely.
Well, all the best from over here in New Zealand. Thanks for talking to us, Phil.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks, Phil. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up,
know when to walk away, know when to run. My tip for this week is it's usually when you're playing in no trumps and you have to pick which suit you're going to try to establish to make extra tricks. And usually you would pick the suit that you have the most of between the two hands. You got eight cards between eight diamonds or whatever between the two hands, you would usually try to establish diamonds. But sometimes you might have a five-card suit with really good pips, tens, nines, and eights and things, maybe just missing the king and the jack or something, and you can take a couple of finesses, and even if they lose, you've established some tricks. Whereas with your longer fit, sometimes if the suit breaks badly and your pips are no good, you still haven't established any tricks. So yes, although that sounds a bit complicated, sometimes it's quality over quantity. Usually it's quantity over quality, but just occasionally. And sometimes you just have not got time to establish a long suit. You've got to lose the lead twice and you can't afford to do that. So sometimes you just have to establish the suit that establishes the quickest. Does that make sense?
I think so. You know, I remember back in the day when, as the clearer, you're playing a hand and you make a mistake and you block yourself out of dummy. It's so crucial to make sure that if you are establishing a suit, that you can actually get back out to do what you intended to do after all your hard work.
That's a very good point. You often see, particularly people when they've just started playing, the first thing they do is they take all the entries out of dummy. They play all the high cards from dummy. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's a natural instinct. And then later on the hand, when they want to get back to dummy, guess what?
Yeah.
There's no way back. So even if you don't know why, sometimes it's a good idea just to keep an entry in dummy so that if you need to, you can get back there. It's like leaving a lifeboat on the Titanic. I'm not saying that all of your contracts are doomed, Mariana, but you know, they're all going to sink to the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, yeah, I know. But sometimes you get into this habit of always playing low when you're going across. And then before you know it, you actually needed to keep a low card because the only one that's left is like the five or the six. And you stupidly played the two from your hand.
And then you realise that two was a really, really important card that you needed to keep.
Absolutely.
That is very frustrating when that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
G'day, it's Pete here, and today I wanted to talk about five things that I wish I learnt when I was starting out in Bridge. The first one I wanted to talk about is that learning new conventions doesn't actually make you a better Bridge player. It's something that almost everyone wants to do because they can see that there's this bit of Bridge knowledge that they don't actually understand. They want to learn more about it. They delve in, and then maybe they actually start playing it. But when you look at it, you don't actually genuinely improve your score very much at all by learning it. For a convention to actually help you improve your score, firstly, you need it to come up. And if you think about how often different conventions come up, it's really not that often. The second thing is you need it to get you to a different spot than if people weren't actually doing it. And you need to make sure you don't actually mess it up along the way. For instance, let's say that you are learning this new way to support majors and you have this really fancy auction where it goes one spade pipe partner, you bid two no trumps, whatever that is, and partner bids three clubs and three diamonds, three hearts, and you get yourself to four spades and you feel really happy that you've used this convention and you've learnt it, you've mastered it. But if you hadn't have done that beforehand, your auction might have just been like this, one spade past four spades. And what's actually happened is both people have gotten to the same contract. Using this convention wouldn't have actually changed your result. You don't get a good score just for using a convention. So you need to have it come up, which various conventions come up a lot, and they're actually pretty good conventions to learn. Others just don't come up that often, and they're really not that useful to try and learn. Also, you need it to help you get to a different spot than you would otherwise wouldn't be able to get to. It has to solve a problem, and you have to be able to use that effectively, because otherwise you haven't actually changed anything. And importantly, you have to make sure that you don't mess it up along the way. If you mess up a convention, you've lost nearly all the gains that you'll get from over like a year of playing it where these advantages might come up. So learning a convention doesn't actually help you become a better bridge player in most cases. You can do very well without learning conventions, but it's something that you can see that you don't understand it and you think you'll be better for doing it, but it's really not the case. Whereas if you look at the flip side and look at learning to improve your card play, if you're a better defender, you're going to be doing that on 50% of the hands. And if that helps you get a trick, even one in five of those hands, that's huge. That is a noticeable difference. Or if you improve your declare play, again, you'll be declaring 25% of the hands. And if even one of five of those, you get an extra trick, that is huge. That will come up a lot. Improving your card play is a much better way to actually become a better bridge player rather than just actually adding in a convention to your system. The second thing that I wanted to go over is that it's actually okay to go down in contracts a lot of the time. Often when you are taught, it's so much about you have to make your contract and it's really good to do that. There's actually a couple of ways you can get good scores by going down in contracts. The first one is I want to talk about who you're actually comparing with. Let's say you go down one in a contract and you get minus 100. And you think, oh, my opponent's got plus 100, which that's the people at the table, their score. Who you're actually compared with most of the time playing bridge is all the people that get the same cards as you at different tables. And what that means is if you get minus 100 and everyone else sitting in the same seats as you got minus 140 instead, you're 40 points better off than them. So it's not that you went negative and you've gotten a bad score. Often people feel like the score that they actually get there is a representation of how good they did or not. But you can have really good scores where your score is negative because everyone else that has the same cards as you goes more negative. Another thing is sometimes you can be unlucky. So let's say we're thinking about, do we bid a game contract or don't we? And to make the game contract, you take two finesses and you just needed one of them to work. That's 75% of the time you would be getting your game contract. And if you did that, you would get a plus 620 for making it. But the 25% of the time, the two finesses fail, you go minus 100. Now, whenever you go down, you're getting a bad score. It's worthwhile to think about is, if you keep doing this over and over and over again, imagine you got that same hand, but you kept rearranging the opponent's cards, it would be really good to keep bidding that game. So while you might get a bad score as such on that particular hand, you want to be thinking with the knowledge that you had, which is just about your cards, was it a good spot to get to and keep doing that? Don't dwell on the fact that it went down this time. Think about, was it a good spot to be getting to and doing that time and time again? The number three thing that I wanted to talk about is make sure you review your hands after you play them. Often I'll see people that play their bridge and once they're done, they're out of there. If you want to improve at this game, reviewing the cards that you play are by far the best thing that you can actually do. So the first thing that I do is ask people questions. Find the best player in your club or the best person you know and ask them questions about their hands.
We'll bring in the rest of that clip with Peter Hollins next week. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. Good morning, Bailiff. Barry's been searching on Google for you.
What I did was, I don't know quite what I Googled, something about what are the chances of becoming a good director, and it said something like that 84% of directors that directed a feature film never directed another one. I wasn't quite sure that was relevant.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's relevant.
Okay, so the other one I came up with was the difference between a claim and a concession. Does that make a difference?
Well, the claim can be the defenders too.
Yes.
When you claim, you can be a defender and say, oh, look, I'm just going to get this boss trump. And your partner can disagree with that claim as well as you conceding and saying you've got the rest of the tricks. So I think they effectively come down to being the same thing. If memory serves, there might be two separate rules. I'm not one of those directors who remembers them by rule number. So I couldn't say, oh, concessions are rule number 69. And
yeah,
I don't do that. So sorry. Effectively, they're treated pretty much the same way. A claim is a claim to take a certain number of tricks. And hopefully, particularly if you're a declarer, it's accompanied by a statement about how you're going to do that. Because if there is a problem and the director comes to the table, the director is not going to say, well, how are you going to play it? They're going to say, what did you say when you claimed? Because when something's wrong, the declarer often realizes, oh, gosh, there's a trump outstanding.
Yeah. Right?
You didn't mention that when you made the claim. The director's going to assume you forgot about it. That's why when the director comes, the question is not how are you going to play it, but what did you say when you claimed? Effectively, a concession is simply a claim, but just saying I'm claiming no more tricks. Instead of claiming I'm taking five more tricks, it's just saying I'm taking no more tricks. And you're right, it's usually from the defense. So sometimes it's done by someone who doesn't realize what their partner's got, and their partner might say, no, 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 partner can intervene there. And sometimes there's an issue about who's exposed what cards and how it affected it. So
the partner immediately objects to your claim or concession.
That will hold up. Okay.
The problem comes when you've exposed cards or you've said something about your cards. So fortunately, it doesn't happen often. But I wouldn't recommend conceding unless you're absolutely sure, particularly some slow declarers. It's amazing. They've got six tricks left and they've got seven or eight top winners and they slowly play it out. It's incredibly annoying. Why they don't claim, I just don't understand. You're playing against someone and you assume, oh, they're doing this again. And actually, there is a problem and your partner's got a crucial card. Claiming as a defender or conceding as a defender is fraught with a few little fish hooks, unless you're absolutely sure.
I can remember one amusing occasion when my partner was declarer. We reached this amazing one, no trump, and he took the first four tricks, and then he said, I give up, you can have the rest, right? That obviously we'd... opponents weren't having that. They wanted to play it out. He said, I can't take any more tricks. And they said, well, we want to play it.
Well, you can't, because there's a rule about after a claim that you can play it out, in which case, if you do, it won't matter what the original claim was, because whatever result you get will be the result. But you can only play it out if all four people at the table agree, and that includes dummy. So if one person doesn't want to play it out, really, it's one of those things. I've heard that before. Someone saying, oh, why did you claim I wanted to play it out? I wanted to have fun playing it out. Sort of like, well, if the result was a foregone conclusion, what you did made no difference. How can that be fun? It's an interesting definition of fun in my view, but there you go.
Yeah, crazy. You don't actually get too many concessions.
I've only had a dollar for every time somebody told me that Patrick was fun.
That would be Julie, of course, telling you that.
Yeah, of course.
I have had that sort of situation, but it's rare enough that I can't remember the last one, right? So concessions where it's caused a problem because partner had a trick or partner potentially had a trick, it can happen, but not a frequent occurrence. Certainly there was none of the weekend.
Thank you so much, Patrick.
Okay. No problem. Bye.
Yeah. He's really awesome,
Hey, what do you think about the entries for Hamilton's Intermediate Peers tournament this weekend? Have you checked it out? 21 and a half tables they've got, and entries don't close for another couple of days yet.
How good is that?
What's more, they've got 8.5 tables for the juniors. Add that up, that's 30 tables.
Very good. I'm glad the Hamilton members are coming in to play. That's really good.
They're not all Hamilton members by any stretch. There's people from all over the place. We've got North Shore, Waitomo, Rotorua,
East Coast Bays,
Cambridge, Matamata, Thames, Petaru, coming from far and wide, Mount Elbert. Good to see.
Especially with the juniors too. I'm pleased to see that Waikato and Hamilton are supporting the tournament. I won't be able to be there this year, Barry, because I actually fly down to Dunedin on Saturday.
So you won't be able to be there making the tea?
No tea making this time.
Auckland have got their online Thursday pairs on. What sort of entries have they got for that? A midweek online tournament? You wouldn't expect that many, really, but looks like they've 14 tables. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. What time does that start?
9:45. They're not very civilised in Auckland, are they? We'd never have one starting at 9:45 in Hamilton, would we? It'd always be 10 o'clock to give you time to walk the dog and whatever else you need to do.
Normally it's either on the o'clock or half an hour, not 9:45.
Oh, they're just uncivilised up there.
Next thing you know, there'd be a 10:15 one.
Oh, the National Teams is being held in Wellington, that the 20A Big Teams event, face-to-face.
Are you going down?
No, I'm not.
24 teams.
Pretty good turnout.
Congratulations and celebrations.
I was reading on NZ Bridge website, they've named the senior teams to go overseas for us. Julian Bailiff.
They're going to the World Championships in Denmark with Mike Cornell and Gao Tislevol, Dwayne Crombie and Neil Stuckey. Team to go to China, to the APBF. Can you pronounce that place in China? H-E-F-E-I. How do you say that?
Hefei.
Team that's going is Michael Cornell and Gao Tislevol again, Malcolm Mayer and Brian Mace, and Somerville and Murat Genk. Good luck to them. One thing I don't know, a lot of people would argue there's a lot of things I don't know. This is one thing I don't know for sure, is what's happening with the interprovincial championships.
The regional championships? Why?
Well, I'm not quite sure what's happening with it. They are talking about having all or part of it at Congress. I haven't heard anything yet. And of course, the trials are looming up. They're being held first week of May. And here we are getting towards the end of March.
Are we doing teams or pairs? What did you say?
I don't know what's going to happen. Each region has got a chance to decide how they want to run their trials. That's up to them. I guess they're wanting to know whether they need a four-person team or a six-person team or exactly what's going to happen. And whether those teams need to travel to Palmerston North for Congress or whether they'll play online or what they'll do. Crazy. Nobody really knows. I'm sure that news must be imminent.
I hope so. Just FYI, people, we have reached out to Central Region, Otago Southland region. They'll be coming on the show over the next month or so. Be great to hear what's happening there. Obviously, New South Wales, they've got some things jiggling over there, Barry. We talk with Jack Andrews next week.
Indeed. So whether you're playing bridge at your local club or whether you're playing in a tournament, best of luck during the week.
If you've got any questions, drop us an email, bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.